Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-500.
Struggling to find reliable senior living information? There's A Place for Answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-500.
I feel so frustrated because I'm trying to talk with Sten Morgan. As I was saying, he is one of the most successful millennial stories out there. And Sten, are you there? Can you hear me?
Frankie, I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. There's a little bit of an echo, Brandon, Jeremiah, if you can fix that, that would be great. But Sten, your success story began when? When did you find all this success?
It was when I was 25. I started my own investment firm, and it was an interesting road to that point, but that's when I made some changes personally, really kind of the way I think and approach my business and life in general that really served to kind of elevate my success to the point it's reached.
Oh, my gosh, in 5 years? That's unbelievable.
Right, yeah.
you graduated from a college in Oregon with a bachelor's degree in finance. You started selling mutual life insurance. You rose to the top 10% of your group. You applied for your dream job in an investment firm and was hired on the spot. And as they say, the rest is history. So we're listening to every word you have to say. And now Sten's book is out. It's called The Seven Mindsets of Success. Yeah. What is, in your opinion, give me five things right now off the top of your head, five traits, five things that separated you from all of the other millennials out there trying to get your job and trying to have the success that you've accomplished.
Yep. I'll run through these quick, and then I'll give maybe a little background if we have some time. But future self is one of the mindsets that was really big for me. That's kind of being able to envision your future self and use that to hold yourself accountable now. I think a lot of millennials and really just people in general in business are so caught up in the moment that they're not looking and saying, 10 years from now, am I making the right decisions to make myself proud in 10 years? And studies have shown if you can do that well, and it's a hard trait to learn or a mindset to develop, if you can do that well, it actually causes you to make more effective decisions now. Perspective is really important to me. So when I got into this business, I said, who are the best people out there, and I want to learn what they're doing. In any line of business, people can become successful over 10, 15, 20 years if they try hard enough, but I need to know what everybody else knew in order to do it in 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
Discomfort was really important. The way I grew up, we were really uncomfortable, moved a lot, multiple father figures growing up. It really wasn't the typical success story, and for years I thought success just wasn't what happened to people like us. And so I avoided discomfort because my life was so uncomfortable for so long. But it wasn't until probably after college that I realized great things don't happen unless you're uncomfortable all the time. Challenges are uncomfortable. So when I learned to really pursue discomfort, that was big for me.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, millennials.
I mean, that's something. I think that's one trait that very few people have on their list. Very few.
You know, it's challenging. Yeah, it's when I do coaching and talk to other people, I tell them, my goal today is to make you uncomfortable because our human nature is going to take us to the path of least resistance all the time. But that's not where greatness happens. And so as soon as we can internalize that and learn to almost live in discomfort, the success will quickly follow.
That's so amazing. Okay. You say that when you say that you mean that you should only focus on 10% of the life you can control and let go of the other 90%, is that true?
I've found it to be that way. I grew up difficult situation. I kind of had a chip on my shoulder growing up, and I spent years just kind of mad at a lot of things that I couldn't control, whether that was authority figures in my life, father figures doing things that it was so distracting and consuming that I realized so much energy and time was spent frustrated at things I had nothing to do with. Other people's decisions, whether that's the market moving up and down on a daily basis in my business now, that if I can focus on the things I can actually control and spend 8 or 9 hours a day on that 10%, while a lot of people are spending half or more of their time focused on things they have nothing to do with, my time was that much more intentional and impactful.
When you look at young millennials today, what's the message that you want them to know?
I want them to know that success doesn't have to take 30 years. I think there's a great generation that was very disciplined and worked in jobs and found success over a longer period of time. And a lot of millennials now, I think, see that and they don't find that exciting enough. And so they change jobs much more frequently. They're not willing to really kind of endure long enough to see the success. If I can communicate to say success doesn't have to take that long, you can do it, but it requires these things. It requires thinking this way. And, oh, by the way, it's still going to be one of the hardest things you ever have done, but you can do it in 3 to 5 years. I hope that can, my example of starting an investment firm in a market where I knew nobody and I was 25 years old and in 3 to 5 years did what I did, it's possible, but here's what you have to do to make it happen.
How do you maintain the level that you're at today? What does that take?
In my business, it takes a tenacity. Again, the pursuit of discomfort, constantly thinking of ways to be different. A great book called Blue Ocean Strategy talks about, are you doing what everybody else is doing in a highly competitive space and trying to experience different results, or are you truly separating yourself? Is your value proposition that much different to gain business? And I knew at 25 years old, if I was trying to give people advice about money, it wasn't just because they assumed I had years of experience. It was because I just technically had to know more than a lot of other people. And so I separated myself by becoming overly educated, educating myself more than most advisors so that I had that leg up.
Do you find that your baby boomers are skeptical of working with you because of your age? And is that become, for you, it's obviously not become a problem, but do you think there are some that are like, what is this young kid going to tell me?
Yeah, I think it was, and I worried about that for years. And I think the skepticism is legitimate to some extent. I mean, you have to just buy your time, and you have to really get good experience in any industry for people to have confidence that you're going to be around. So early on, I had to chalk up some lost opportunities to it's just not my time yet. You know, I could be frustrated that I got a no, but if it was because my age, again, that's a circumstance I can't control. As I obtained the success I have, and I was recently named to the top 40 under 40 advisors in the country, once you reach a level of success, I think now those baby boomers are looking at me as an advisor that can stay with them for a long time.
Yeah.
Credibility now. So a lot of baby boomers now want to work with me because I'm young.
I think that's absolutely spot on. I mean, who wouldn't want to pick your brains because you're thinking.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic, is completely odorless, and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
Boost your immune system naturally with Silver Biotics. Nestled in the foothills of the majestic Rocky Mountains, American Biotech Labs, LLC, is determined to serve you. Our Silver Soul technology is a patented technology that will forever change the nano-silver market. One of our company goals is to bring to you nano-silver products that are affordable, powerful, and yet as gentle and natural as the earth we live in. Enter in code Frankie30 at checkout to receive 30% off of your order at ablsilver.com. Once again, that code is Frankie30 to receive 30% off of your order. Visit ablsilver.com today. These products are dietary supplements. These products have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Products referenced are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Please consult a qualified medical professional for information, diagnosis, or treatment of such diseases.
Here's George Foreman with InventHealth.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do now?
Help today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventors information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Welcome back. It's Frankie Boyer, Biz Talk Radio, biztalkradio.com. And joining us now is attorney Barry Wilson. Barry Wilson has been practicing law for many years, a recent Supreme Court nomination. And Barry, it's a pleasure. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just like the record to reflect, though, that I'm not a practicing attorney at the present time.
Oh, okay.
But I was an attorney for over 42 years.
You were one for over 42 years, and you're really passionate about our legal system. And
yes, well, I tried to be. Unfortunately, our legal system leaves a lot to be desired.
What's your biggest frustration right now with the way law is practiced?
Well, I think that the largest frustration is basically is we can see the distinction between the fact that if you have money, you may be able to obtain what is called an illusion, but justice. Whereas if you're a poor person, you're subjected to little things such as bail that may be only hundreds of dollars, but to the average human being, he or she may not have that ability to get out, to be released. And what we see is that, again, as indicated by the President of the United States, who just bullied everybody because he had money. He would just sue people, not pay people. But in other words, it's not a system that's based on what's fair. It's a system that's based on who has the cash.
Absolutely. I think it was at 60 Minutes or one of the television news shows did a report on the legal system of what's really happening and people that have been in prison, and if they had money, they would be released today. You're absolutely right. The fact that public defenders can't handle the amount of trials and the cases that they have, that there's definitely an injustice, a tipping of the scales, if you will.
Well, I think that not only is there injustice, but I think that what we need to see is we're taking steps backwards. For example, one of the two of the biggest problems in our society are called the Koch brothers. But even people like the Koch brothers and their right wing fanatics have come to understand that we're wasting money, and for the wrong reasons. The right resolution is coming about in which they're lowering sentences, they're releasing people from prison, and the only reason they're doing that is because they realize we're running out of money and we can no longer afford to waste billions of dollars incarcerating people who shouldn't be
incarcerated. Let's look at two cases that right now are in the news this week. One of them is a local case that we've all been watching with two teenage kids.
Michelle Carter.
Yes, Michelle Carter, and her friend who wasn't really a boyfriend but was a friend, and they had a connection of some sort, and he tried to kill himself, and it attempted several times. And he sent her a text. And she texted him back, get back in that car and finish the job. And she was just found guilty by a judge. She did not want to have a jury. Did she make a mistake by having the judge be the ruler of her future, or should she have gone with a jury trial?
Well, I think that's one of the hardest questions any defense lawyer finds. I mean, the argument is that you're better off with 12 people than you are with just one. The question becomes, though, that in this case, her lawyers, and again, I'm just speculating, but her lawyers may have felt that it was an extremely legal question they were dealing with, i.e., was speech enough, which I disagree with the verdict. I don't think it was enough. But was speech enough in order for her to be convicted of involuntary manslaughter? They put an expert on the witness stand who indicated that, unfortunately, both of these young people, who were both in their teens when this occurred, and there's all kinds of studies, including what's been reflected by the Supreme Court and why we shouldn't give juveniles life in prison without the benefit of parole, is that the brain is still formulating, probably to the age of 25.
That's right.
And then
yes.
We find out that both of these individuals were not only taking drugs that had been prescribed because of mental impairments, but also this young man had attempted numerous, at least four is by the reported press, attempted to commit suicide. This young woman, although I'm not going to give her accolades for what she did, I don't think she committed a crime. I don't think she should have been prosecuted. Do I think she needs help? Of course I do. Do I think the entire thing is a tragedy? Of course I do. But
right.
Then I go to the same sort of question. Why bring this case, or was it just a dog and pony show, to garner publicity for the district attorney's office? I mean, it's no different than I'm not going to praise Bill Cosby. But however, why would I waste all this money prosecuting
right.
a 79-year-old man who can't even see? What I would have done was made a deal with the guy and taken $25 million plus and set up a fund to help women who are abused by men.
Yes.
Because sexism is alive and well in America, and whether Bill Cosby is found guilty or innocent isn't going to change that. But money, mm-hmm. programs, that could make a difference.
I think
so we need to have a justice system that has an ultimate goal rather than just, quote-unquote, we're going to put people in jail. But unfortunately, the mentality with the present attorney general, Jeff Sessions, who I might add once was nominated to be a judge and a federal judge and couldn't even get through the Senate because, unfortunately, he's been known to harbor racist attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what are we going to do? Now we're going to lock them up again. We're going to go back to draconian measures that have never worked. It appears that, unfortunately, most of our leaders today refuse. Well, a president doesn't read. But they refuse to follow history and see what does and doesn't work. And we cannot incarcerate ourselves out of a problem. We change a problem by changing the conditions, the circumstances, by creating opportunities for jobs and education and health care, etc. But these are very complicated responses that require some introspection, that require some ability to see and think about what we can do in the future to alleviate what is obviously a very difficult situation we live in. But in answer to your question, I think that unfortunately, I don't agree with the verdict in Michelle Carter, and I don't really agree with the prosecution of Cosby. Not because I think he deserves a medal, but because, again, another dog and pony show. There's
yeah.
not enough
yeah.
resources to go around. Instead of wasting money on prosecuting Cosby, we should be trying to do other things.
Well, Barry Wilson, this is such a great conversation. We will continue the conversation because it's nice to have someone who can reflect on the legal system, and I agree with you about this young woman. I think she needs help. I think that she needs a lot of help. She doesn't need 30 years in prison, so I'm hoping that she won't get that kind of a sentencing, but we'll see.
Well, unfortunately...
And by the way, we will, to be continued, the Supreme Court ruled that potentially offensive names can be trademarked. How about that? We'll be back... Next, we'll be back in a moment. This is Frankie Boyer. Stay tuned. This is Biz Talk Radio.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen.
$20 fill-up from KFC contains 8 pieces of freshly double-breaded extra crispy chicken, 4 biscuits, 2 orders of mashed potatoes, and a side of coleslaw for just $20. That'll feed them. KFC, it's extra crispy good.
Pricing and participation may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars.
And who would have thunk all those years ago this song came out, and we're still trying to find equal pay in many instances. The inequalities are crazy. And joining us today is, but we're getting there. International Women's Year, the greatest consciousness-raising event in history. Jocelyn Alcott, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about this movement, this new book, and what you're doing.
Yeah. So 1975 was the first of what became a series of UN women's conferences. And it was really the first major international gathering of that sort. And it became a turning point in the way, not just that we think about feminism, but the way that women's networking started to work. So we think now about all these non-governmental organizations, these international or transnational organizations. Those all really get going in 1975. And so it's a really interesting moment in the history of feminism. You know, I think, like you said in your introduction, a lot of the issues, when I went back to look at this, I thought that I would be seeing issues that we've long since resolved. And it's really striking how many of the issues that are up for debate in 1975 are still very much alive and well today.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true. It's so true. Let's talk about the gathering of all of the women that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was so exciting.
Yeah, it's, it was kind of unexpected how exciting it was, which is that it started out, if you think about the UN, and you know, a lot of your listeners may not think about the UN if they can help it, but it's a pretty staid and bureaucratic organization. It has a lot of protocols to it, a lot of sort of traditions and expectations. And so that really very constrained and staid culture was coming smack up against the 1970s, which was, of course, not just about feminism, which was raucous in its own way, and all of these other social movements and liberation movements of various sorts, but also decolonization movements. So the UN itself had been completely transformed by, you know, really cresting waves by 1975 of decolonization throughout what was then called the Third World, in particular Sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. So your readers might, or your listeners rather, might recall that 1975 is when the Vietnam War finally concludes. Mm-hmm. So it's this moment in world history and in social history when all of this social turmoil is in play, and it's crashing right up against some of the more culturally conservative institutions of the time, which would include the United Nations. And the thing that happens in Mexico City that's a complete game changer is that the woman who organized the conference, there's really two events that are happening here. There's one that's this UN conference, which is very, it's all government delegations. They're called instructed delegations, which means your government tells you, you know, here's the parameters in which you can negotiate and no further. And then almost the very first time, it wasn't the first one, but it was the first of two or three that had these what are called NGO or non-governmental tribunes, so a parallel tribune of non-governmental organizations. And the woman who organized that, who had come out of the civil rights movement in Virginia and been really inspired by that, decided that rather than have it be a non-governmental meeting of what are called consultative status, or these kind of recognized establishment NGOs, so things like the YWCA or the International Association of Women, these kind of white glove organizations, she decides to open it up to anybody who wants to walk in the door. And as a result, it becomes radically diverse. She expends a ton of time and money trying to get women from the Third World, so from Latin America and Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa in particular, well, all of Africa really, to this tribune to be part of these conversations. And, you know, there are limits to what she can
do. I just want to remind everyone, we're talking about 1975.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And
a
time when there's a lot of, a lot of women of color in the United States refer to themselves as third world women. there's that kind of connection between of trying to establish solidarity between women who are fighting for their national liberation in places like Angola and Mozambique and Vietnam, and women of color in the United States. It's a very intense moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision to open all that up and say, let's just see what happens. And in fact, the organizers of this decide not only are they going to open it up, they're going to preserve all of this open space on the agenda just to create a forum for whatever women want to talk about. And it becomes a space for really, really intense fights and debates.
Can you imagine everyone sitting out there having Professor Olcott as your professor? Your students at Duke, how lucky are they to have you as the professor of history at Duke?
How lucky are they to have you?
I would have loved to have had you as a professor. Oh, my gosh.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. We have wonderful students here. I can't complain.
Okay. But this was so significant because it really... Tell us why this was such an important event and where we are today, if you wouldn't mind.
Mm-hmm. So there's a few reasons it's important. One of the critical reasons, if you think just within the UN, UN development policy, and this is strange to think of now, if for people who pay attention to this, UN development policy now really always, I mean, women are really central to it. In development textbooks in 1975 never mentioned women. And one of the things that really motivates the women who organized particularly this NGO conference was that in 1974 there was this big UN population conference where people, as they point out, everyone seemed to forget who was having the babies, right? And so they were trying to think about fertility and not thinking about how women figured into that. And it got into a lot of issues about women's rights and also about issues of racism and racial discrimination because the population control efforts were really about controlling populations of color, right, of all kinds. And so mm-hmm. those two things got really intertwined at this moment in important ways. And that, I think, seeing those, and you can see, again, you see the roots of this somewhat in the civil rights movement. Seeing those together is really important. But the critical part of that is that for a lot of these women who came from, again, what they at that point called the Third World, and today we would probably call the Global South, or, you know, there's a lot of different terms, but the women coming out of these countries did not identify themselves with feminism. They saw feminism as this crazy North American idea, probably some form of cultural imperialism. So 1975 is the beginning of a moment when a lot of women, both women of color within places like the United States or the UK or women from these poorer parts of the world, start to say, wait, there's something for me in feminism and for my community and my family in what feminism has to offer. And so two things happen. Feminism changes these communities, and these communities pretty radically change feminism in important ways. And in ways that, so if you think about the way things played out in the Women's March in Washington right after the presidential inauguration,
yes,
that you really see the lessons learned from the 1970s of the importance of including all of these voices, and not just in a pro forma way or a kind of, you know, token way, but in a way that really lets those perspectives change how we understand our program.
You know, it's so fascinating how they were expecting 60 to 75,000 women in Boston. That was it. And, you know, over 300 to 400,000. I don't even remember what the latest numbers were in Boston, but we couldn't leave to march because there were so many of us in the common. It was no room for anybody to march.
It was the same thing happened in D.C.
Yeah. So we know that women are so powerful. Now what? You know, so we have these incredible moments,
mm-hmm.
these shining lights.
You know, it's interesting. This was a major conversation, as you can imagine, at this conference as well, because there was a concern that you have a big, you know, spectacular conference, and then everybody goes home, and that's the end. And you know, an extensive part of this conversation was saying, okay, how does this become the beginning of a movement? And I think we're seeing that with the Women's March as well, frankly. They've really made an effort from within the organization and from the bottom up to make this part of a more enduring movement.
Yeah. Professor, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Come back anytime. What's the best website? How can people find out more about the work you're doing?
You can go to jocelynolcott.com, or my book is also on the Oxford University Press website.
Awesome. Thanks so much, and we'll be right back. Frankie Boyer, stay tuned.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The future of holistic health is here. Possessing the power to maintain wellness at the cellular level, RegActive is a revolutionary and remarkable new supplement that will transform the future of preventative and restorative health. RegActive features the innovative probiotic strain ME3, a patented probiotic with over 20 years of research proven to naturally stimulate and produce glutathione, the body's master antioxidant. Glutathione is used by all of our cells, especially in the fight against free radicals, environmental toxins, and the effects of aging. Our levels of glutathione decrease dramatically as we age, leaving us very vulnerable to age-related health issues. Revolutionary, remarkable, RegActive. RegActive is from Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing Dr. O'Hara's probiotics to the United States 15 years ago. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide, where Dr. O'Hara... Thank you.
That's 800-716-4650.
And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer, and it is a pleasure to welcome back the award-winning author, Mindful Mom, meditation expert, and the new book is out, Get the Most Out of Motherhood, a hot mess to Mindful Mom Parenting Guide. And she's at it again. Allie Katz, welcome back. Your first book, Hot Mess to Mindful Mom, 40 Ways to Find Balance and Joy in Your Everyday, changed the lives of thousands of mothers. And now the new one is out. It's called Get the Most Out of Motherhood, A Hot Mess to Mindful Mom Parenting Guide. How are you, and welcome back?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so happy to be here and happy to be bringing another book to the world. It's like a dream come true.
So. Oh, I bet it is. You know, there was just a piece on this weekend, and, you know, I just love these magazine format shows, and so I watch a lot of them, and I get guest ideas, and I get lots of ideas, and I was watching one of them about the changing faces of fatherhood. But the truth is that it's because of the changing faces of motherhood that fatherhood has to change.
That is a really, really interesting concept. You know, I hadn't thought about it, but I think that it's true. I mean, so much about the way families typically seem to run is that the mom really sets the tone in the household. But the way I see it when I think about it, now that you bring it up, I feel like it is definitely changing for dads, too. Dads are doing so much more these days and are so much more involved and, you know, it really is more of a partnership between parents instead of moms doing everything. So
yes, yes.
I really agree with that.
It sounds like it's important for an equal partnership. But Allie, it's about self-care. And we hear it every single time we get on an airplane. You hear the instructions. You know, if anything happens, put the oxygen mask on your face, and then you can help someone else, but make sure you put it on yourself before you help anyone else.
Absolutely. And every time I get on an airplane, I silently thank them for the extra little reminder.
Yes, yes. And so we now know that at this time in life, we have stress at the highest level. We are doing more in a day. I mean, the scheduling alone, and I'm not talking about just little ones. I'm talking about before they get their license. They still need to be.
Oh, trust me. I know. My kids play tournament baseball, and it's insane some weeks.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's so much about making it easy on yourself, finding, like, how small little tweaks can have such a big impact. So I think people sometimes feel intimidated or overwhelmed about bringing some of these concepts like meditation and mindfulness into their life because they think, I don't have time for that. I can't do one more thing. But I like to say that I teach meditation and mindfulness for the real world. What are really easy, simple tools that you can use that seamlessly fit into your day that you hardly even notice once you start using them? They're quick, they're simple, they're easy, and they work. That's my specialty. That's what I share in my books.
And that's the key. So if you don't have a half an hour, 5 minutes. Cumulatively.
We can start with one. I teach people all the time about 1 minute meditations.
Yeah.
You know, how to just match your inhale and your exhale at a traffic light, in line at the grocery store, you know, while you're cooking dinner, whatever you're doing, you can breathe. You can count to three as you breathe in and count to three as you breathe out. For a minute, there, you just meditated. You had a mindful minute. And now you're feeling more centered and balanced. So
that's
you can
really important.
Respond to things instead of reacting to things all day long. I do that all day long. I not only teach these tools, I use them myself all day. So they work, but you have to use them. And I tell people, you have to give something a chance. You can't try something one or two times and say, oh, that doesn't work for me. Like, if you are going to journal or practice gratitude or meditate, it's not a one-and-done thing. You have to give it a chance. So I tell people, don't have shiny new object syndrome when it comes to these mindfulness techniques. Pick one that you want to start with and stay with it and see how it works for you. Don't jump around constantly because you won't give anything a chance to work.
And I know that you're very concerned about diet and lifestyle, and it's so easy. It's so easy. I just want everyone to understand. I am the queen of fast, down and dirty, down and dirty. If it's not down and dirty and fast, don't get in my face. I don't have the patience for long involved. And I was so hungry yesterday, and I wanted something really fast, and I bought. I know it sounds so funny, but I got Brussels sprouts. I roasted those Brussels sprouts in this wonderful, healthy sauce, sweet and sour sauce, that had no sugar, by the way, no sugar whatsoever.
Good for you. That sounds awesome.
And I just threw them in the oven, and I took a can of chickpeas, a little tahini, little olive oil, a little lemon and artichoke, and threw it in my Vitamix. I had the most absolutely awesome, a half hour later, I had Brussels sprout chips and hummus homemade, and it literally took me 10 minutes to do it.
And now you have that in your fridge ready to go.
That's
right. So prep is the only way that I survive and eat healthy.
Absolutely.
Because I'll spend about 45 minutes to an hour on Sundays cooking for the week. So I like to get all my pots and pans out, cook one time as much as I can, get everything dirty, clean up once, and then have everything in the fridge ready for the week. I call it my Sunday prep. This is actually my free gift on my website. If people go to hotmesstomindfulmom.com, my free gift is Sunday prep, what I do on Sunday to plan for a stress-free week ahead. And prepping food is my number one thing. I couldn't eat healthy without it. It's
We love you, and we need to have you back on a regular basis because we need the mindfulness. We really need this. This is very important. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What's the website?
Anytime.
What's the website?
Hotmesstomindfulmom.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we'll be back next time. Boy, this was a fast day. Thanks for being with us. This is Frankie Boyer for Biz Talk Radio. Make it a great day. And as always, smile.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by.
And do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.